So I'm coming at this from the perspective of someone who's researching and teaching in film studies and cultural studies and media theory. It's the area that my research extends into. One of the projects I'm working on at the moment, just starting, is a book on cycling and cinema. It's a history of representations, cultural media history of on-screen representations of cycling from the 19th century through to the present post-cinematic period. I think so. My disciplinary approach might be a bit different from some of us, but there are obviously a lot of points of intersection that emerged yesterday between the discourses of different disciplines from both within and outside the academy. So just a couple of points. The symposium title is Transport in the Media. Much of yesterday's discussion understood this to refer to news media, which is the sense that journalists and politicians talk about the media. But there are a couple of ways that we might question this framing. The first is to employ a more expansive definition of the term. In media theory, medium is a means of communication, and this extends from communication through cinema, theatre, to music, performance art, dance. And so in those terms, to think about representations of transport in the media might invite us to think about representations across a variety of platforms and a variety of contexts. So, for example, thinking about news media involves thinking about print media, but it clearly also involves thinking about television and online media too, if we're going to have a clear picture of how messages, images and concepts circulate. So one of the points that was made repeatedly yesterday is that contemporary news media constitute a complex field that work in different temporalities, some of them instant, some of them delayed, and combine sound, image and text in different ways. A number of the discussions assumed a clear distinction between online and print media, but I suspect for readers this distinction is much less clear. Cultural theorist Raymond Williams, writing about television in the 70s, talked about how television is experienced as a flow of sound and images. The French philosopher Jean Baudrillard talked about the deluge of material, media material, that we're swamped with continually. And it's useful for us to, I think, reflect on the ways in which we process this material as readers. A second implication of this, of an expanded concept of communications media, is that as speakers and teachers and activists and writers and bloggers and tweeters, we're all communicating through a range of media ourselves. One of the frustrations that was expressed yesterday at several points concerned the inability to get messages across to journalists accurately and through journalists, through the mediation of journalists, to general publics, various publics. But it seems to me that while social media presents us with a methodological problem with regard to how we study them, this is something that came up yesterday, they present us with an opportunity in two key ways. And the first of these is that since social media are increasingly becoming a source of news that competes with traditional institutional media, they offer us a way to access publics directly, as well as addressing them through the intervening layer of journalistic interpretation or mediation. This seems to me to be a cause for optimism. This is a good thing. Secondly, insofar as news agendas are increasingly set by social media trends, this gives us the opportunity to dictate news agendas if we're canny enough in our use of social media alongside more traditional modes of academic publication. So, in other words, although it's common to complain about the way journalists are just reporting on Twitter, at the moment, this gives academics an opportunity to shape the sorts of narratives that are being spun by journalists working in mainstream news media. The punk singer with the Dead Kennedys, Jello Biafra, has always said we have to stop complaining about mainstream media and become the media. And in a sense, that's what is possible, newly possible, at this point through social media, for example. Although, academic discourse constitutes the media already in another sense. Another interesting point that emerged in discussions yesterday, I think, was the frustration that even when presented with rational arguments in favour of changes in behaviour, people don't change their behaviour. We know it's bad to drink, smoke, eat junk food, to drive, but we still do it. And it's tempting to attribute this to misrepresentation of the facts, and if only people could really understand the environmental harm, driving 4x4s are doing short wall flights to, they'd stop. The extreme example of this is Richard Dawkins' exasperation with the morons who still believe in God despite the fact he's explained it to them repeatedly. So one danger of this is that it overlooks the extent to which we're fundamentally driven by irrational and unconscious impulses that are often self-destructive or masochistic rather than altruistic. J.G. Ballard said his novel Crash was based on this contradiction, because getting behind the wheel of a car is the most dangerous thing we do from day to day, and we know that this is the case, but we still do it. And to some extent, perhaps the danger is part of the draw. For Ballard, in this novel, understanding this behaviour was a matter of understanding the pleasures and the fantasies that are attached to car culture, because a car is not simply a practical means of transport, but it's a symbolic representation. It's a commodity that's invested with a range of fetishized meanings, which include messages about wealth, social class, sexuality, and gender. And I think this means that if we're thinking about representations of transport issues, mediated representations of transport issues, we have to situate these against the consideration of cultures and subcultures, and recognize that one of the things that drives social changes is cultural change. So in relation to thinking about cars, this means looking at the history of automobile advertising. Certainly, this was a point that came up towards the end of yesterday, but also looking at motorsports and the history of motorsports, looking at images of cars on film, in literature and fine art. And so there's a methodological issue here that calls for what Monica called yesterday a multimedia or a mixed media method. Driving cars partly means transporting people and goods from one place to another, but it's an activity that's invested with meaning. It allows us to enjoy a fantasy of control, individuality, freedom, even when we're sitting in a traffic jam, absolutely static, we're still living that fantasy. To some extent, the fantasy becomes even stronger, the desire for that becomes even stronger, the further we get from being able to realise it. But one crucial aspect of the fantasy is that it's a fantasy of consumption. The car's a symbol of the expenditure of money and the consumption of resources, diesel, petrol, oil, rubber, leather, steel. And this is something also we need to think about in advocating competing low-consumption technologies. Our culture is one in which consumption is a key source of pleasure and gratification. And final point struck me as something of an omission in yesterday's discussion was the relative absence of gender. Sean mentioned the important symbolic role of women as visible anti-road campaigners, and Jeremy Clarkson was mentioned a couple of times as representative of car culture. Cosman's paper touched on the stereotypical masculinity of cycling subcultures. And I think this raises the question whether another way to understand issues around car cultures, transport and resource consumption, and the resistance to rational debate over these topics is in terms of the way that they're so heavily gendered. George Monbiot recently wrote a piece in The Guardian about the way that fossil fuel policy in the UK and the US is dictated by machismo. So fracking and blasting and drilling are all very popular with politicians keen to display an aggressively macho public image, whereas wind, solar and wave power are all seen as soft feminine technologies. So therefore unattractive in the context of a misogynistic, homophobic, political public culture. And the same goes for cars, as we know very well. As Christina said, just try searching for the hashtag women drivers on Twitter and it immediately exposes a very sort of clearly gendered understanding of the sort of the cultural practices of driving. So one of the things perhaps this suggests is that we need to frame discussions around energy consumption, transport issues, cultural change and individual behaviour in terms of perhaps a feminist politics that understands social structures and practices and cultural change in more gendered terms. So there's a